The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
You might have heard of the co-parenting app, Our Family Wizard, but are you aware of what makes this popular app a go-to solution for over 1 million parents and family law practitioners, including myself?
It's the way that Our Family Wizard helps co-parents organize their calendars, expenses, and messages. No more back and forth texting with your ex over who's paying for your kid to give Kaylee, Kyle, Kaden, or whoever a birthday party gift.
That's right, because Our Family Wizard can organize monthly expenses, everything from medical bills to birthday party gifts, and help you send effective and productive messages without the snark. In fact, Our Family Wizard even has a tone meter, a built-in snark detector that will help you tone down your messages.
And although snark can be really fun, it's really expensive and damaging to your mental health and your kids. So save the snark for happy hour with your friends and save the money for the birthday party presents and check out Our Family Wizard.
Our Family Wizard, making co-parenting easier.
People start to listen a little bit more when the finances get real and it starts to become unaffordable for both sides.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce.
So it's good to see you, Andrea, because as you know, I've been kind of MIA this week. I'm on this crazy trial that's been taking me kind of out of commission completely, which, you know, it stinks when divorce lawyers are on trial because everything else has to go by the wayside because you have to put 100% into the case to really do your best. And you've got a lot of other clients that aren't happy. And then also, you know, I want to do a good job in this podcast. So the moral of the story is, hello, it's great to see you. I think I'm on hour 13 of work and now I'm recording this. So if I say anything really stupid, just cut me off and just, you know, let's give some grace tonight, right?
You know what? I have been dying to have a cut Morgan off green light for 4 seasons now. So I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
But babe, I've got good news for you. Perk your ass up. Guess what today is?
What?
Today is the 70 motherfucking fifth episode of our show. 75.
What? How do we have that much time?
I don't know. And people have listened to our dribble drabble for 75 episodes. We fooled you all. 75.
What is that?
That's not centennial. I'm not that smart. Quincentennial. What's 75?
Quinceanera. I'm just kidding. I'm just totally kidding. If anyone knows what 75 is it an octogenarian? What is it?
You know, I think that maybe our very special guest, he's got to be good with numbers, right? And
you would hope.
Lucky for him, he's actually already on with us right now because he's just that cool and that lively of a man. Mr. Sam Sharp, mortgage broker to the stars. I just gave you that title, Sam. Do you have any idea what 75 is?
Yeah, I think the legal term is one hell of an accomplishment, I think is what they call it.
Thank you, Sam.
Yes, congrats to you. That's amazing. And I'm honored to be your 75th episode. It's pretty cool.
Well, thanks. You know, it's funny because you can get to 75 if you're dumb enough to record 75 episodes in your closet or in your son's closet. But the fact that people are listening, that's where it's pretty awesome.
Exactly.
I should have bought a cake or something. I feel.
If only you knew. We're going to have to stay in the closet for a few more episodes. But we'll have a very special coming out of the closet episode at some point. And then we expect a cake, Sam.
I think I saw a TV show like that once.
Well, you being here and us reaching this milestone of 75 episodes is certainly not what I am over this week. I'm very much under us and our accomplishments and you, Sam. But I'll tell you what I am over.
So there's something I have to get off my chest because I'm just so over it.
Oh my God, me too. Okay, scale of 1 to 10. How over it are you?
11. How about you?
12.
Okay, well then I gotta hear this.
And And this is really me stripping down, not literally.
What? But
yeah, no, it's not that kind of show.
Don't do that to poor Sam. We just invited him on.
I know. Podcast. All of a sudden we see Sam's gone. He's like, I'm out. I'm out. I don't want to see this. You really don't want to see it after I share with you guys what I am over. You ready for this?
Ready.
This week, ladies and gentlemen, I am over my fat ass. My butt. Stop laughing, Sam. My butt has gotten so fucking big, and I don't know where it came from. I've never had a fat ass my entire life. I'm a small girl. I am a small girl. And this is what happened to me today. And I am so, I'm actually starting to like schwitz now that I'm talking about this. I'm so stupid, but I'm going to share this anyway. I'm like fanning myself. I was walking by a window earlier.
No,
listen. I'm walking by a window. It's actually leaving therapy, a proud moment for me from the beginning. I'm walking out by a window and I see my reflection. And I think in my mind, my God, why is my butt so big? And then I realized I wasn't thinking. I was speaking those words out loud. And a man is walking right towards me as I'm saying it. So this poor guy is just going about his day and he sees me say to myself, why is my butt so big? And this guy turns around, looks at my butt, and then shrugs his shoulders.
That's a you problem. That's a your problem.
I don't know. Maybe it's your diet.
You know, are you over or under that though? Is it under you? It's under you. You're over it. Like literally, I'm thinking.
It's so good.
Physical wise.
Well, I'm really sorry about your ailment. That sounds really tough.
Yeah, it's so, I think that this happens with age. Like, I really think this is, because they say that like as women get older, like the weight goes like lower.
Like gravity?
Gravity. Gravity
takes over on your rear.
And Steve, okay, when I say Steve has mentioned it, don't send him hate mail. He's a very good guy. But like, I think once he made a comment, he was like, that skirt's a lot shorter on you now. And I'm like, I don't know, maybe it's shrunk. I don't think that's what he meant.
Well, men are not that clever. Sorry. So he probably didn't. That isn't what he meant. Who knows?
I'm like really hot over here. I can't believe that I just talked about my
fat. You are really hot with your fat ass.
Get out of your fat ass.
There are songs. Hit songs have been written about this, you know.
Like, girl, I think your butt's getting big. And mm-hmm. I like the big butts. And I cannot lie. Mm-hmm. Now, you other brothers can't deny my fat ass is going to have to buy another house so that we can all live together, which is exactly why we brought you. Look at that for a segue, y'all. Look at that.
Not bad. Reaching a bit, but pretty good.
Just a little far reach. Not as far as my ass can reach. But on bump. So let's talk about mortgages, baby.
All right. Okay. Now, speaking of what I'm over this week, yes. I'm over, good timing. I'm over mortgages.
Oh, well, you can't be because you're here to talk about how great they are. It's all the things. Condition.
So yeah, I'm happy, always happy. It's a love-hate relationship, I tell you.
Well, let's start this off by actually saying that the reason why we're having this conversation about mortgages is that in the private communities that we run, which by the way, our private community has grown so much in the past few days. Like I think we brought in 30 people in the last 2 days alone, maybe more than that. So the How Not to Suck a Divorce community is just blowing up and we love that. And we get so many questions and there's been a lot of questions about mortgages lately. So I'm gonna read one of the questions we got because let's kick off this talk by reading this. The question is what someone wrote in, how are people making separation work right now with the interest rates being so high? This person goes on to say, we haven't filed anything yet because we feel like we're both going to get screwed either way with the house. If I refinance and give him cash, my mortgage will almost triple what it is now. And I'm not sure if I can afford to sell and buy another home. So guys, if you can relate to this question, then this episode is for you, baby.
Yeah. And you know what, Andrea, this is a huge legal issue right now in my cases. I would be, you know, not speaking the truth if I didn't say that the majority of my clients who have a house in play are talking about interest rates. It doesn't matter if, you know, you have no money in the bank or a ton of money. It's a financial decision that people don't want to feel like they're getting screwed on. So we talk about it all the time. So I'm thrilled to welcome Sam Sharp to our show today and to learn more about options and ideas in this, you know, financial market that we're in right now.
Well, there you go. Well, Sam, hey, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. Hopefully I can shed some light on some options and some ideas as, you know, exactly what you're looking for as far as for a way to try and at least find some type of financial relief in this, you know, as if things aren't tough enough.
So Sam, we know that you're phenomenal. You're at the top of your game, but what we're going to do in this episode is we're going to start with the total basics because we don't want anyone listening to be like, I have no idea what they're talking about. And if that's you, that's okay. We're going to start with the basics. So everyone knows what we're talking about here and we're going to baby step it. So no one's confused.
So let's start way back at the beginning. What determines an interest rate and why the hell are they so high right now?
It's a loaded question, but we'll start with the first half, easiest. So interest rates are primarily impacted by credit score. It's probably the largest driving factor. So credit score, equity or down payment. If someone's buying a home, the down payment, if they own the home already, then how much equity they have in that home is going to be another key factor, as well as property type. So certain types of property will have a higher interest rate depending on a combination of these factors. And for the most part, these are what you'll hear people call loan level pricing adjustments, which is probably way too in the weeds for it. So let's just say these factors are controlling what your interest rate is. And popular to recent media attention, someone with a lower credit score does not get a better rate than someone with a higher credit score. There was a lot of this in the news recently, and it was really a hyperbole that was trying to distract people. So strong, higher credit score, better interest rate. More equity or larger down payment, better interest rate. Property type, single family homes are great, but if you're dealing with a condo, you don't have a lot of equity, you're going to have a higher interest rate. Multifamilies, 2 to 4 units, higher interest rates. So it's really going to be dependent on those three key factors as far as what you'll see. Now, why those rates are so high? Well, a couple things. Inflation is a driving factor for interest rates, right? And I think that, well, those are the two topics you hear about everywhere right now, right? You hear about high inflation, you hear about high interest rates. And the reason why they're coupled together is because one is related to the other in this fact. However, that's not the only driving factor right now, which has become, well, never become more apparent until now, because inflation has come down. Well, not low, nowhere near the benchmark, but we are seeing that the inflationary costs, anyway, are half what they were a year ago. I didn't say prices because we're not feeling the prices in our pocketbook. So when we talk about inflation, I think it's important to point out the fact that just because inflation comes down doesn't mean your grocery bill went down, you know, because there are still other factors you have to account for that are coming into play, such as higher wages, higher borrowing costs, right? Interest rates are up, banks borrow money at a higher cost. I mean, let's face it, these are businesses and businesses pass those costs on to the consumer. So inflation is a driving factor. When that goes up, interest rates go up. Inflation is coming down, but interest rates are not coming down. Matter of fact, they're actually going up. This is also based on the, which is kind of strange to say, the state of the economy, which seems apparently to be doing very well, right? People are spending money. People are traveling. They're filling the restaurants. Hotels are full. People are out shopping. There's a lot going on right now. And because of that, they're not really moving quickly to pull interest rates down. I mean, again, in a business, let's face it, it is a business. How many businesses do you know that will bring the prices down when people are standing with a line around the door to buy the product.
No one.
Right? Exactly. And that's where we're at right now. People are, there's not enough housing. People will pay no matter what, they're still paying the prices for it. People will pay $9 for eggs, right? They're, even though that was technically not inflation, but still a relatable topic. As long as people keep paying those prices, then they start to show, okay, there are good signs of strength in the economy. Job reports just came out and showed strong wages, strong growth. Now, there is some information in there that contradicts, though, because we are, and I don't want to get too financially boring on it, but there is some information where you'll see that there's a lot of layoffs that have been happening recently, particularly in some surprising industries like the trucking industry, which is had a huge shortage. So there is some writing on the wall that that could change. But one thing that's apparent, interest rates will not come down until we start to see some type of severe economic impact. People have to start to lose jobs. People have to stop spending money, and then the interest rates will come down. So right now, interest rates are so high because inflation is high and people are spending money like crazy.
Okay, so thank you for that. Super helpful to start at the beginning. I want to talk to our listeners about the legal issue that I see, and then I want to ask, you know, Sam some more questions. So the legal issue that I see over and over again is a couple comes, maybe let's just say the husband has hired me, and the husband says, listen, I want my spouse to stay in the house. But when we got the house had an interest rate of 3.25. Right now, when I'm looking and talking to mortgage brokers like Sam, in order for my wife to stay in the house, to refinance, to buy me out, she's going to have a 7.5 interest rate or something like that. The price is more than going to double on her monthly amount. She's never going to be able to afford it. What options do we have? And that was kind of our listener's question, which is a great question and definitely something that's keeping a lot of people together, or at least making them think about it. So this is kind of when you have to start being creative. This is when you have to hire, like Andrea and I always say, it goes back to the first thing, the right counsel, because this is when you don't want to go to court. This is when you want to be creative. So there's different ways that you can do that. And so number one, what can you do? Well, you can figure out a creative way by allowing your spouse to stay in the house for a certain period of time. And how does that look? Well, there's so many different things that you can do. So yes, you may have equity tied up in that house for a little bit of time before they can refinance. Or we could offset that equity with other assets, depending on what other assets you have in your estate. So we could buy you out of that equity with other assets. And then when the interest rates drop, assuming Sam is going to tell us at some point in life they will, we'll get that house refinanced and that your name will come off of it. So that's one thing that we can do. And I'll stop for a minute because I see Andrea's face going. So what other ideas or options are you thinking about?
Me? Or
yeah, you.
I have no, I don't know. This just makes me sweaty.
Sweaty.
It makes me sweaty. My ass is growing over here. I don't know. And it makes me worried for these people, because I think that this is one of the issues that it's so hard to make a logical decision, right? And like this kind of stuff has to be based in logic. These are numbers, right? But it's, we're talking about someone's home. There's so much emotionally tied to that. Yes. And I think that this is one of those cases where you have to be able to like look at numbers and think with your brain and not with your heart.
Agreed. Right? Yeah, this is a business decision.
It's a business decision. And that's so much about divorce that sucks, because you're going through something that's so emotionally tumultuous, and now you've got to deal with this bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is tough stuff. So Sam, like what does somebody do in this case? Wow. Like, let's go back to the question that the person in our group asked, like, what does she do?
It is limited, unfortunately, from a financial, as far as some of the vehicles that are available, because if you're joint on the, let's just say, well, it doesn't even matter if you're joint on the mortgage or not, right? If one person's going to take sole possession of the property and therefore assume the liability, then they would have to replace that loan if they're not the sole lien holder at that time. Now, if you're in a relationship, and if you're getting a divorce and the person who's maintaining the property is the one who has the mortgage in their name, easy enough. Then you're dealing with maybe how are you going to transition that equity out? And that's a different ball game. But in the example that you displayed here, I mean, you're right. The interest rate will double, right? You are going to be in a position where those costs are going to go up. And I see right now on average, I'm dealing with about 2 to 3 a month, with a fair amount of people who are going through this situation. And it's not always resolved quickly because it is an emotional decision. Now, I do find that people start to listen a little bit more when the finances get real and it starts to become unaffordable for both sides. Because that's the reality. It can very quickly be something that neither party can afford. And, you know, I've got actually several different examples today that I'm dealing with clients, not me personally, but with my clients. And they're in a position where, now one of them, the worst ones, just start with that, it's spiteful, right? It is an emotional position, not in a good way, meaning that I'm not gonna take sides on who's doing it here, but I think we'll probably understand who's doing what. One person is very happy that this creates a position that will not allow their spouse to keep the property. Mm-hmm. Like, so they're playing on the emotional side that go ahead, try it, see what you can do. Now I'm on the other side trying to help this person, saying like, well, that's not cool. You know, there's kids involved, like younger kids. It's like, yeah. You know what? Because normally I'd be like, hey, play on the emotions here. This is where our kids have grown up. This is what they're doing. This is their home. Let's try and help maintain some integrity through this. But as we all know, integrity and emotion don't travel hand in hand. Very rarely will they. So in this position, we have a very bad place. So we're trying to work through a co-signer. Okay. They're getting someone to help them. They're getting someone else who has financial backing that's going to step in and say, hey, I will help you afford that. Yes, your payment is going up. We're in this position. Now, the benefit here is that we're using what's called an equity buyout. When someone refinances a property and they have to take equity to buy out their spouse, right? They have to get cash out. A lot of people would look at that and say, hey, you need to use a cash out refinance to do this. But there's actually an instrument through Fannie Mae that allows us what's called an equity buyout that will allow you to buy out your spouse, and it's not considered a cash out refinance. The benefit, you can get more of the equity out because you're not capped at the same limits as a cash out refinance. Also, you have much better interest rates. Cash out refinances have higher interest rates. So going through this type of instrument for them works out really well because we're able to say, look, we're going to use, the interest rate is going up. It's not going up as much as it has to. And we are finding you financial support. So one avenue is to get someone who can help you with that financial burden if you can't qualify on your own, right? That's one way to go about it. Okay. The other situation that we have, well, neither of them can afford it. That's it. And they have to sell their home. And they're in a position now where the conversation is moving towards pre-approval for each of them. And, you know, this doesn't happen very often. I'll tell you that where I'm working with both sides, it does happen. But I'm working with both sides in this transaction. And, you know, of course, they're both very distraught about the cost of what they can actually be approved for and what that will cost them moving forward. It's not from an affordability standpoint because they both qualify. And it's really that mental hurdle of understanding that this cost of living has now gone up substantially. Not only are they going through such a difficult time and such a dramatic change, but yeah. Now they also have to deal with a dramatic change in their lifestyle financially as well. So talking through those people with the options, if someone's going to go through this first, you want to find out who's going for the property. If there is a financial instrument that'll allow for them to do that through an additional borrower to help the person who's maintaining the property, that's one way. Selling the property, unfortunately, is always an option where they can go through and sell the property, divide this as an asset. But then, you know, and Morgan would be the expert here on this one, but I often, when I talk to people and they have an amicable, at least at this point, they're amicable about it, or let's just say they weren't amicable, but the finances smack them into that position very quickly. They've come up with creative instruments where they maintain the home and they actually have hold, it's like a secondary interest-free note that they're holding saying, look, you get the property, but we have to take care of this at a later date. And there's ways to do that. And of course there's risk with anything, but it's another way to try and combat this type of environment that we're in. And then the last thing I'll say on that, piggybacking off of the assets, as Morgan mentioned, I do have some clients who have a significant portfolio for their asset portfolio, and they're actually taking out a loan against their portfolio at a very low interest rate that's allowing them to split and divide the property as well. So they took out a loan, and that was based off, they were already dividing those assets, and the assets that the one spouse is left with is substantial enough to still maintain a loan to pay the property out. So
what, Sam, let me clarify what you're saying there, just in super black and white. What he's saying on that last option is, if I'm just going to throw out random numbers. If you have $2 million of stocks that you're getting that are sitting at Merrill Lynch or whatever brokerage house, you will contact your broker and say, hey, could I potentially take a line of credit out or some kind of credit access line to buy this house or refinance this house effectively or buy out, the other side so that it's a lower rate than potentially a mortgage. That's what he's saying there.
Exactly. It seems dangerous to me to take a loan out against your financial portfolio, but it sounds like you guys are saying that it's not dangerous at all.
Well, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying, I think, and I don't want to speak for Sam, but I think we're both saying that knowledge is power. There's, if you want to keep your house really badly and this interest rate is really driving you crazy, like everybody, you've got to know all the options. And this is an option. And the person who can guide you to tell you the right financial decision would be your financial advisor, who could potentially give you that line of credit.
So I want to go back to something, because Morgan, you touched on this when you were giving the example of what this looks like in real terms with a divorce, and you mentioned creative solutions, and then Sam also mentioned it. And that's something that we talk about over and over again on this show, is, and that's one of the things that sets this show apart from other shows, is that we're always giving creative solutions and we're giving some finite action steps. So let's go back to that. We've talked about the idea of a co-signer. Morgan, is that something that you see a lot? And would that fall under the category of like a creative solution?
Yes and yes. So I do see that a lot, especially with sometimes spouses that don't have a lot of work history behind them, because I'm sure Sam will say that it's not easy to get qualified for a mortgage if you don't have, income steady coming in for a period of time. So a lot of times,
employed, I would imagine.
Maybe. And I'll defer to Sam in one second. But so one, that used to be what we see all the time, is that the spouse who has no job or no income really wants to either refinance or buy a new property, and they didn't have the backing. So that's when we would say, do you have a co-signer? Do you have a parent? Do you have a brother or a sister, somebody who has the assets and the financial backing that will get on the mortgage to allow you to get this refied or a new mortgage? Now we're seeing it because of the interest rate, because again, they're not qualifying potentially. So yes, that's a creative solution. And Andrea, will you ask your question again to Sam so he can let you?
Sam, okay. The first part is, again, about like creative solutions. If somebody, I'm assuming that the answer is yes. If someone is self-employed, it could be challenging to show like steady proof of income, right? So do people who are self-employed often need to use a co-signer in this case, if they're looking to refinance?
Not necessarily. I mean, self-employment is, the difficulty that people have when they're self-employed is that what's good for the accountant is bad for the banker, right? Yeah. So you qualify based off what you pay, your taxable income. So your adjusted gross income is what you'll be able to use. That's your borrowing power. Well, a good accountant tries to get that number down as far as possible, right? We want to pay as little in taxes. So self-employed people will have problems because they write off all of their income, and then their qualifying income doesn't look as well. But there's ways around that as well. There are loan programs that we can work with through bank statements and other avenues of showing that there's cash flow when it's not filtering through the tax returns. But you actually are even more accurate in your assessment that, unfortunately, in a lot of these situations, the spouse may not be financially in a position where they've even been working, or they haven't been, or they're working part-time, or they're financially weren't ready for this type of position, and they won't qualify to traditional lending standards. in which case that's when we get back to things like a cosign or whatnot. Because I think something that's important through all of this that we think about, we can think of creative ways to make this work. But if that's putting someone in a bad position, that's not a good idea, right? Like,
I agree with you. I agree with you. And that's one thing that we were talking about, you know, Andrea, I think we talked about it maybe on our house episode. And I know we've invited Sam on our special Patreon app. We've never had him on the podcast. So here he is, his first, you know, go around with the real podcast. But I think we touched on this too. If you're not, I know that divorce is overwhelming. It's awful, right? We always say that. But knowledge is power. And so it may behoove you or be a good idea in the middle of your case, before you're even to the house issue, to touch base with a broker like Sam and say, hey, here's the facts. What are my options? And will I qualify to refinance, or what do I need in order to qualify for refinance? And so, because I've had cases where in the middle of the case, we realize, hey, this spouse is never going to qualify. What do we need to do to get this spouse to qualify? And throughout the case, we figure it out creatively so that when the case is done, they qualify. So that's what we're talking about, creative ways to do it. But Sam, one thing I wanted to ask you, and I want to get into our three helps and to-dos, but if someone's like, oh my gosh, I want to refinance, what should they even think about that they need to even get together for refinancing? What do they need?
So when you're qualifying for a loan, it's always based off of three main pillars. It's credit, income, and then equity in this case, because we're talking about refinancing, right? So, and it's like a three-legged table. If one of those are not strong, the table will not stand. Well, same thing, you're not getting the loan, right? I have a lot of people who are like, my credit's great. We have a lot of equity in the home, but they have no income. And that can be a problem qualifying, right? That's just a situation. So what you want to do is you want to have a good understanding of your financial outlook. You know, what are you doing for income? How are you, not only, you know, how much do you have? How are you paid? These are things that a lender is going to ask you. It's one of the initial questions I speak with every client about. So it's funny, because when you talk to people, they're ready to tell you how much they make, but they're not always as prepared to tell me how they get paid, right? So when I talk to people, I interview them based off of what I think might direct the way that we need to get this done. So I'll ask them about things like if they make commissions, if they make bonuses, variable components, things that I know could trick them up in underwriting. So I'll go through and I'll look through that. So you want to be prepared to understand, how are you paid? What's the structure of that? If there is a settlement in place, right? So if there is a separation agreement, if there's some type of maintenance in place, right? If they're going to have alimony, child support, one thing you want to keep in mind is that in most cases, you have to have proof of receipt, and that ranges anywhere from 3 to 6 months is the most common. Meaning, how hard is that, right? Well, I'm getting paid enough in maintenance that I can afford this, but I have to show you I've been receiving it for 6 months before I can actually use it to qualify for the loan.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I actually just did this in a case where we knew they wanted to get divorced. We knew what the divorce was going to look like. But at the divorce, we had my client moving out of the house, and she didn't qualify for anything else. So what we did is we kind of put the case on hold, and we started creatively getting her the maintenance and child support payments early. And we held that divorce judgment for a period of 6 months so she could qualify. And then it was a very fluid, you know, end to the divorce.
See, if I was from Boston, this is where I'd say that's because you're wicked smart. Because you know, that's a creative solution. That's a really good idea, because that is the case. You've got to get set up so you can qualify financially. So, and that goes under that income sector. Make sure you know what your income looks like and how much you need to qualify. Credit, you know, some people are not paying attention to what their credit looks like, or they just make assumptions. Watch out. Are you joint on any credit cards? Is there things that you have with that spouse? If you're in a position where things get ugly, you got to try and protect yourself, right? You make sure you're in a position where if you have joint accounts, one thing to keep in mind, if you're joint on an account, like a credit card, and there's no negative history, you can separate. You can dissolve that or separate. If there's a late payment on that credit card, you're on the hook, right? And that's because that's the point. That's the point of having
people
tied together, that when there's trouble, then they have two parties that are liable. So as you start to go down this road, very quickly understand what's on your credit. What are you signed on for legally? Make sure you know what that is And if you are joint on some accounts, maybe look at separating those while you can very quickly.
So Sam, what about the clients that I have that say, you know what, I'm so miserable right now in my marriage. I just, you know, they're coming to interview me. They're like, I'm so miserable right now, but the interest rate's freaking us out or freaking me out that I don't feel like I can leave. I'll just wait it out till interest rates drop. I mean, you're the interest rate guy and obviously the Fed and everybody else, but you know, from what I'm reading, I don't know if interest rates are going to drop for quite some time from what I've read. I mean, what do you feel at this point? Is that even a viable option for someone who's sitting there miserable in a house?
No. I mean, I think with anything, they say, hope for the best, plan for the worst. Like you should never plan on interest rates coming down for your financial future or your financial freedom or your freedom period in your life. Like you can't take that risk because otherwise you could find yourself waiting for 2 years, 3 years, who knows what's going to happen. And on the flip side of things, if that person is thinking about interest rates dropping, and then they're going to buy a new home, that's worse because the reality is that when interest rates do come down, the prices are going up more. So you're really paying for it. And it's worse to pay a higher price because you can't change that, right? You paid that price. If you have a higher interest rate, you can get rid of that later down the road and replace it with better terms. So I wouldn't wait for that. I'd instead better align yourself with what your options are in the immediate future and then go from there because you don't want to be caught in a bad position. I mean, it's not anywhere near the same situation, but I mean, in 2006 and 2008, there were a lot of people who made plans based off what was going to happen in the future, and it didn't work out that way, and that was a catastrophe. So take control of the situation. Don't allow that to happen.
How do people predict, though? Like, I mean, we always see people like talking, you know, on TV shows about, oh, well, this is what's going to happen with the rates. This is what we're seeing. Yeah. I mean, are they like the weather guys? Are they just making this shit up? Or how, like, is there any kind of barometer that's used to know whether things are going to go up or down?
I have one of those magic eight balls that you use.
That's really what it is.
Big at parties. They were awesome. And it always tells me to check back later. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to get a straight answer out of it. Even my magic eight ball won't lie to me lately. So there are economic key factors that people watch, whether it's treasuries, inflation, I said earlier, right? But I have to tell you, so I've been doing this for 22 years and I have seen all of those indicating factors. I've seen them where they're completely wrong and they're completely opposite of what you would believe. And even now, inflation drives interest rates. Well, inflation is down. Shouldn't interest rates be down? Oh, well, no, but this. The problem is that people move the goal line on you all the time. They have an economic understanding of this is why this is going to happen. I'm included in this, right? I read the tea leaves. I look at the economic data. I say, look, based off this information, this is where we're headed. And this is when I see this happening. But then that can be completely wrong. I'll admit it. I've been wrong twice this year. And in things that I felt very strongly about in the pattern of interest rates. And I came from a fairly well-educated position on why they were going to move and what that was going to happen. And what we predicted was going to happen did happen. Those key factors did hit, but they did not have the impact on the interest rates that we thought they were. And, you know, it's very difficult, but so people will watch based off of the economy. I think that one pattern that does seem to follow suit is that a stronger economy can carry higher interest rates. That seems to be fairly common. And then people will look at predictable patterns. I mean, supply and demand drives a lot of this. That's not necessarily the interest rate pattern of it, but that's the housing problem we have. So you can focus on interest rates all you want, and you can use the predictable factor saying that these economic indications will push rates one way or another, but you're still just making an educated guess. Now, I'll give you one if you want.
Oh,
I'll educate. I'll guess.
Your eight ball on you. Your magic.
You need the bet.
Oh my God, I keep it in my backpack. I mean, it's right next to my Ouija board.
Okay, pull out your trapper keeper and let's run. What's the prediction? Now I have to know.
All right. I can say it's not a matter of if rates will go down. It's a matter of when, because there's economically the patterns do ebb and flow, and we are in a position where there are going to be some things that will not look so good as far as our economy goes, right? And you can see the writing on the wall that because it's a global economy, and you can see the problems that are going across the globe right now, right? Bank of England just increased their interest rates, right? Australia just did it. Like, these are banks we never hear of ever that are starting to really push back and are starting to go against this. So we're seeing economic hardship start to rear its ugly head. And as we come off of these types of patterns historically that we've seen, granted, I don't remember the last time they reported on a pandemic that we came out of in this type of situation, but and we're printed trillions of dollars into the system. But following the patterns, which does seem to have some validity, it's shown that we are looking at some type of financial hardship coming up in the next few years. That will bring interest rates down, just like a strong economy pushes rates up, problems in the economy bring them down.
So friends, let me just interject and say that if your eyes are rolling to the back of your head right now and you've run your car off the road, you're not the only one. I don't know what the hell we're talking about. I'm deeply confused and that makes me anxious. So let's do this. Sam, I want to give people some action steps that they can really like wrap their arms and brain around. So let's just talk about rates in general, not about refinancing, not like maybe somebody is going to go into a new home, right? And they're just trying to be smart about this because again, knowledge is power. Anybody can Google the basics, but you're an expert. So let's pretend for a minute that you're giving like a TED talk, right? On like three secret steps that you guys wouldn't know if you Googled, unless you did a deep dive, but these are Sam's three things that you want everyone to know. So let's list those out. And I want these to be baby clear. Like I need a fourth grader to understand this shit. So okay. What would be these three steps? And then let's go into them because I want people to leave this episode feeling empowered and not more confused.
Right. Myself included.
Yeah.
I don't like where this is going. It started out so fun. So Sam, liven it up here. Let's talk about these three things.
I've got you covered on this. I'm ready for the TED Talk. I've got my black t-shirt on. I'm good. In.
You're ready. I say, let's shake up that magic eight ball and give it to us.
All right. First, you can never be too proactive when preparing for your financing. I think that's a rule of thumb and it's something that I live by. Second, you can shop around for your mortgage. You can shop around for interest rates. You can have your credit pulled. Okay. So that's number two. Number three, trust the professionals. That's why you've hired them in the first place, right? Listen, work, make sure, and I'll expand on these if you would like, but you know, you want to make sure that you're following the instructions of the people that you trusted. Always look for explanations, but at the same time, make sure you're following their instructions.
Okay, let's back it up. Like that to the point. Give us number one again. I have a question on number one and number two so far. So give us number one again.
Number one, you can never be too proactive when preparing for your financing.
Okay, what does that mean in like two sentences?
You want to make sure that you understand what your buying power is or your financial power is. And that ties directly into what we talked about as far as understanding your income and your assets.
Interesting.
And make sure you're comfortable with your spending habits, right? So you may qualify on paper, but there are things we don't see. Like maybe you spend a lot of your money on going out to dinner all the time and things that we're not paying attention to. So make sure you consider your lifestyle as a factor in that as well. But have a realistic idea of what that looks like and then consult with a professional on that. So when you're proactive, I talk to people all the time. They'll say, listen, I'm not looking to buy a home for 6 months. So I really don't want to get into this. I'm like, well, you're right on time. We should be talking about this now. Now, truth be told, I'll tell you that if it's a year out. So it's because I believe you can never be too proactive. There's nothing that you're going to do that's actually going to hurt you.
With that though, do you feel like it's dangerous for people to go on like a spending diet, like an extreme spending diet, if that's not the way they're typically going to live? And like, let's say that they look at all this and they're like, oh God, we go out to eat a lot. Like we really love going out for steaks, you know, every few weeks, and we're spending a ton of money. We need to cut that out. Do they do that if it's not going to be like, it's kind of like people who do keto, right? And they lose like 20 pounds in a few weeks. Speaking of keto, my fat ass would probably enjoy that. but if they do that and then they're like, oh, we solved our problem, but it's not sustainable. And then they're going to have problems like making these mortgage payments. Like, does that, am I making any sense here? Or would you say,
you use the best analogy, like you said, a fad diet. Do fad diets work?
Right.
No, don't fad diet your financial stability. Don't try to come up. Don't try to change the situation if it's your, that's what I mean by quality of life. If you like to go out to dinner, go out to dinner. Just be realistic with how much does that leave left over for housing? And right. What does that translate to in a mortgage? What does that mortgage payment look like then in the cost of a home? Make sure you understand in the environment, what does that mean? How much money can I get? What can I get for that monthly payment? Or I need to buy a home that's at this price. So I want to buy a $600,000 home. Well, how much is that going to cost me? Because that's really what we run into is people in especially in the case of divorce, right? They'll find out like, oh, wait a minute, my mortgage payment's going to be $6,500 a month. I'm not comfortable with that. I guess I don't want to keep the house, mm-hmm. right? So you've got to make sure you're being proactive and understand what that is. Don't try to make these drastic changes if you know, because it's not going to stick. And then later down the road, it's going to be a problem. I joke and tell people the new car smell of owning a home wears off very quickly, right? 2 months in and you can't go to your favorite restaurant or you wish you didn't live in this home anymore.
Okay. Thank you. Number two, shop around. Okay. I have to tell the listeners, this is not I love shopping around, but for mortgages, this is not something I did. And I'm kind of regretting it because I didn't know that this was a thing. And also something you said, Sam, was that don't worry if your credit's pulled. I've always been told, you know, if you get your credit pulled over and over again, it's just going to ding your credit. So that's part of the reason that I didn't shop around, because I was like, well, I went to a good reputable bank. This interest rate seems in line. I would have loved to shop around. I just didn't want my credit pulled like four times.
So I'm pretty sure the idea that you can't have your credit pulled more than once was started by a mortgage lender somewhere who tried to keep people from shopping around.
So if you pull, if three mortgage lenders pull your credit, that does not hurt your credit. Is it looked at as just like one pull, or how does that,
if it's within a 14-day period, it'll register the same credit scores. So when you start to see your credit drop, it's if you have a lot of inquiries from different industries. So credit cards, student loans, mortgages, we use a different algorithm. That's why the credit score is different. When you find out, oh, I watch my credit on Credit Karma, but it's different than when you go and you apply for a mortgage. Because the actual system and the algorithm that pulls your credit is a different type of inquiry. If you have multiple inquiries from different industries within a 90-day period, your credit score can start to drop. And that is also dependent upon how strong your credit is. You have a 620, which would be low, okay? If you have a 620 credit score and you go apply for a credit card and then a car loan, and then I go to pull your mortgage or your credit to apply for a mortgage, you're probably gonna drop your credit score. But here's the big secret, usually 1 to 3 points, okay?
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's not. And a lot of times I talk to people and they're like, my credit score dropped because everyone's pulling it. You know, I talked to three different lenders. They pulled my credit and I know that it dropped. It went down 40 points. And I can, without even looking at it, I can tell them immediately, that's not why your credit dropped. Sorry, it's just not, that's not how it works. There's something else in your credit. And you're gonna love the next line when is what I tell them. You're gonna love the next part because I need to look at your credit to figure out why. So send me a copy or I have to pull it. Right?
Okay, but so tell me about shopping around. How do you know, I mean, obviously, it's not just about the rate, but can rates really vary that much from lender to lender?
So they're not, I mean, we are all drawing from the same well. You're not going to find a tremendous difference from one bank to the next. In certain circumstances, you will. Sometimes there can be a bank that has an appetite for a certain type of borrower, whether it's a price point, credit score, whatever it is, you know, and do your due diligence and see what you, you know, if you find something that's good, be careful. If something looks too good to be true, it very well could be. But, you know, if your employer has an agreement, for example, I know a law firm that has an agreement with a bank, and the interest rates that they secure through that bank are half what I can give them. It's legitimate and they get the money, and that's the way it goes. And it's just it's an agreement where they actually, the bank loses money on the mortgages because they hold the assets and depository accounts of that institution. They have their money. Remember, banks make their money off of you giving them your money and they lend and them lending it out, not mortgage money.
You said if something is too good to be true, then it probably is. Does that mean that there are fake mortgages running around here? Like, what does that mean?
So you'll have lenders, the bait and switch, right, is the term that is, I think, a lot of people are familiar with. People will tell you and advertise lower interest rates. And then when you speak with them, it'll be like, well, you don't qualify for that. And this is why. So if I advertise the lowest interest rate based off a, you know, a buy down of excessive fees, you want to make sure when you're comparing lenders, compare the interest rate and the costs. Because right now, especially, banks and lenders will offer a low interest rate, but then it comes with extensively high costs. You have high closing costs, and they do this because they're getting the at bat, so to speak. You're calling, you're talking to them. Once they get you on the phone, they're going to sell you. There's a lot of high pressure sales in lending, unfortunately. And if someone can bait the hook, then they're pretty good at convincing you.
Before we move on to point three, how do you know if your closing costs are in line with what they should be, or if they're just totally out of whack?
You want to, when you're talking to the lenders, you want to compare, you want to have an explanation from the lender, which costs are estimates and which costs does the lender have control over? This is the one thing I point out to people all the time. And unfortunately, the majority of the costs are estimates from third parties. People don't understand that, especially title charges. There can be some things that are just out of your control. So then you want to look for some consistent figures between a couple lenders that you're comparing, right? If you see one lender, and I see this with out-of-state lenders, they'll show title charges that are more reflective of the state where they originate from, right? And maybe they're, let's say we're in Illinois, right? If they're in Indiana, title charges are lower there, half what we pay. So I can see an Indiana lender immediately quoting someone and they'll show them the title charges look to be half. And that person immediately is like, their closing costs are lower. I'm like, no, their estimate is lower. But when you get to the closing table, you're not paying the estimated fees anymore. You're paying the actual fees and those will be higher. So make sure you're talking to reputable lenders that you can trust, compare them and look for those similarities, but then ask them to define what they can actually, what they're in control over.
Oh boy. Okay. The third secret that you gave, I can't even remember what that was at this point. What was the third secret?
Trust the professionals.
Oh, right. Right.
So I have clients that I talk to and we ask them for things and they say, oh, you don't need that. No, you don't need. Oh no, I don't need to give you that. And this is why. No. That's my favorite. That one just gets me every time. So my voice is going, forgive me.
That's okay. Take the water break. There's been a lot of information. You know what? I'm going to do a shot of tequila. You take a water break. Let's just, we're going to bang this out.
You want to trust the professionals, the people that are giving, that are trying to help guide you. That a good lender should create an intentional process showing you step by step what you're looking to do, and they should give you a very well-guided approach on how you're getting from one step to the next and why. Okay. You should also make sure that they're not guarded when it comes to explaining those steps, because that happens, right? It's never just a we'll do it just because I'm telling you to do it. That doesn't work. I'm not saying trust someone because they tell you that's what they say, but more so follow the instructions, ask the questions so that you are educated and you have the knowledge to get through it and you have an understanding. If you don't want to understand, that's okay, but just make sure that you're following through the steps that they're guiding you on and you're working with someone that you trust.
That would be me. I would be the client that's like, I don't really want to know. Can we just make this happen? Because I would get overwhelmed, and that's embarrassing to admit. You know, these action steps are helpful. And something else that this having us think of, and this will be the last question, friends, and then we're gonna recap all this for you. But how do you know if you're in good hands? How do you know if you're working with someone whom you can trust and who knows what the hell they're doing? Like, how do you know they're not actually using a magic eight ball behind their desk?
So you want to, I think first, one of your first line of defense is look to connect with someone who is, you know, recommended from a professional that you work with, right? Or that you know, or a friend, right? In this case, if you know someone that you trust professionally, talk to them about people that they also trust. And that's a good stepping stone. Do your research, right? If someone tells you that they think someone's good and they've had a good experience with them, you know, maybe take a quick look online. We do live in that world where you can find a lot of information on there, and take it with a grain of salt, but you can find some viable information online for those resources. Be careful though, because Aunt Marge might refer someone to you that was amazing when she did her loan 35 years ago, and it's not really applicable anymore.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Love that.
Yeah. Your person that you're working with, do they have to be local?
No.
Like, if I'm buying a house in Chicago, do I have to work with somebody who's based in Chicago?
Technically, no. Technically, you need to work with someone who does business in Chicago and has a firm understanding of the market and how to look out for the pitfalls. And I think there is something to be said for someone who's local, because the accountability factor is a little bit higher, right? If someone's local and they don't do a good job, then chances are their business is going to suffer. But at the same time, technology's allowed us to cross state lines. And I mean, I hate to say it, but I run into that on the other side, right? I'd love to tell you that to my benefit and say, yes, if you're working someone in Chicago, you need someone in Chicago, because I'm in Chicago.
Right.
But the reality is that I do business across all 50 states, and I'm more well equipped to handle mortgages in, you know, Seattle than the lender that's sitting right next door to that person in another office, because that person just doesn't do a lot of business. I do a lot of business in those markets. So experience will trump location.
That is so good to know, because I don't know that I would have known that had I not asked, which makes me think, if we have people who are listening to this show who are just feeling like they're in the middle of the ocean without an oar in this, and they need some guidance, we can certainly send them your way. And if you're not able to help them, would you be able to push them in the right direction? I would love 100%. It if you said no. I would love it if you were like, no.
Actually, sometimes the best way that I can help people is by pointing them in a different direction. That's just the reality. The idea is to help. I like people. I do like to help them. I mean, don't get me wrong. I do run a business, but at the same time, I look at it on the side. I like to step outside of it. It's a job, and I'm a person, and I like to try and do things that I can to help people regardless of that, because it, you know, helps me feel better about life in general and about humanity. But yeah, I'd be happy to help in any way that I can when it comes to that. And you know, I think that when you're going through that, that's a good example of a trusted professional. People listen to you, they trust what you're saying. You know, feel it out, talk to someone. Watch out for people who do not explain things. That's the one thing that I'll tell you. That's a general red flag. If someone doesn't want to give you the explanation, if someone doesn't want to take the time to answer your questions, then that's probably not the sign of someone that's very trustworthy. Or maybe they're just not, you know, they're not involved enough or interested enough in that business, and they don't want to take that time. And that's also dangerous, because they may not successfully help you get from one point to the next.
We call those red flags to look out for, just like how when you're going through, when you're married and you're seeing all these red flags pop up in your relationship, these are warning signs that you might not be married to the right person for you, you know, like pay attention. If you're getting a funny feeling, or if you're not fully understanding the process, and you're not like me and you'll want to understand the process, then, you know, maybe you're not working with the right person. Okay. So Sam, since you had the privilege of opening the show with us, we're going to let you close out the show too. So yeah, I know this is your really lucky guy. So let's segue into one of my favorite parts of the show, which is where we joke around that if you have blacked out and you remember nothing of what we talked about, if you've done one too many tequila shots, this is what we need you to remember.
If you remember nothing else from this episode of How Not to Suck at Divorce,
we just want you to remember this.
And I'm not going to do this part because I don't know. So Morgan, take it over, and you and Sam, let's recap for everybody what they absolutely need to know from this episode.
All right. I'm going to recap a few things that I want them to know, and Sam, pipe in with anything I miss, which I'm sure I'll miss a few. First thing that I didn't know that you should know is don't worry about shopping around. Shop around, find the best fit for you. And also, don't worry about your credit being pulled. And if you're worried about it, speak to the mortgage broker about it. So I think that's one of my big takeaways. Number two, legally, speak with your lawyer. They're going to have creative ideas for you and options. And even maybe talk to them before you're willing to jump into a divorce if this is one of your big issues. All right, Sam, go.
I'll take a page out of your book, Knowledge is Power. Make sure that you're doing your research. Make sure that you're having the conversations that you need to with people that you trust and you know, and that people that you also, you know are looking out for your best interest in that. And look to educate yourself on what those options look like. And just to clarify, I should tell you, because you can't have your credit pulled. Don't go crazy on that one. two or three times, okay?
Yeah.
But otherwise, outside of that, yeah, I mean, options, knowledge is power, options are key. So look for both of those to come hand in hand.
All right, and I'll bring up the rear here. Haha, no fat ass. Of course you will, Andrea. So what I want everyone to know is you don't have to be an expert in this arena. This is why you go to an expert. Don't feel bad if this episode overwhelmed you. This is exactly why we bring people like Sam on our show, because we want you to work with the right people, because you can't possibly know about everything. You don't listen to every single episode of our show and think, yeah, well, I knew all of that. If you knew that, then you could get divorced yourself. You'd be doing DIY divorces, would be all over the place, and they'd be successful, and they're not. So this is why we want you to work with somebody who will really take care of you and answer your questions and lead you in the right direction. So we're giving you information because we want you to be knowledgeable, and you cannot do this alone. You need to be in the right hands. We say this a million times. All roads lead back to hiring the right attorney for your case. Work with the right lender. Find a person who is going to explain things to you. Work with a mortgage broker who wants to help you. Find the good guys. Find the people out there like Sam. And let's start with reaching out to Sam. So Sam, give everybody the information of where they can find you. And yes, friends, we'll link all of this directly in the show notes.
I think the easiest way, and probably an easy one to remember, is you can find me at www.samsharp.com.
There you go.
It's easy enough. There is no E on that, right? And you'll find all my handles and social medias and different things that where you can reach me at any point in time. And I think it's pretty funny because you were talking about someone who felt overwhelmed and confused by all this, but you just wrapped that up better than I ever could have thought of doing. So you apparently got a very good grasp.
Well, you know, thank you. And this is exactly the reason why we do this show, because it's an overwhelming process. Are you making a joke about my fat ass? Did I miss something? Did you say you're a fat ass? You said fat ass.
You know what? He's afraid of you by now, so just keep going.
Damn it, yeah. Sam. Trying to have a nice moment here.
I'll keep the jokes aside.
Okay, we're going to get through this, friends. This is why we do the show. We are here to help you through a process that sucks. You don't have to suck at making your way through this process. We are giving you expert advice. We're giving you action steps, things that you can do to help yourself get to a better place, because life on the other side of the divorce or refinancing the home or getting into a new home, even if you have to sell the home because you can't afford to keep it, life is going to get better. And you just need some help getting through this. We are here for you. Sam is here for you. Thank you so much to all of our friends who have supported us 75 episodes strong. Woo! You have shown us so much love and support, and we hope that we are giving it right back to you. We appreciate everything that you've done for us. Please don't stop now, though. If you haven't rated and reviewed our show, what the hell are you waiting for? Go over there. Give us only 5 stars. Anything under 5 stars will not be accepted. I will personally go and delete it. Write us a glowing review. And we cannot thank you enough. Join our private communities. Follow us on social. What else can I say?
Just remember, divorce is a marathon. We always say that it's day by day. Sometimes it's hour by hour. But at the end of the day, you will be okay. Time heals everything. Andrea knows this better than anybody. And remember this, you've got this and we've got you.
For more support, please join our private communities on Facebook and Patreon. The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast is executively produced by Andrea Rappaport.